A recent study found that learning a second language slows down the aging of the brain, decreases the effects of Alzheimer's, and I've come to terms with losing mobility of limbs and functions of several vital organs, but take away my mind and I am hemlös I mig själv, sorry. I mean, take away my mind and I'm homeless in my own skin. You're listening to a Scottish Poetry Library podcast.
Welcome to the SPL podcast. My name is Jessica Johannesson-Gaitan, and today we have something a wee bit different in store for you. Back in July, I was delighted to meet up with poets Juana Adcock, Agnes Turek, and Yanis Kalkonos for a conversation which involved a variety of different languages as well as some splendid poems. Juana Adcock is a poet and translator, born in Monterrey, Mexico, and based in Glasgow. Her first book, Manca, explores the anatomy of violins in Mexico and was named by Reforma's distinguished critic Sergio González Rodríguez as one of the best poetry books published in 2014. Agnes Turek is a bilingual spoken word poet, poetry workshop leader, and member of collective Loud Poets. Her show, Sorry I Don't Speak Culture, about languages and homes, won the Best International Spoken Word Show Award at the 2014 Fringe Festival. Yanis Kalkonos was born in Greece and grew up in Corinth. He moved to Edinburgh for a Master's in Creative Writing from the University of Edinburgh, and his first collection of poems, Dakrima, was published in 2011. It was absolutely wonderful to get the chance to talk to all three of these poets about what it means to be bilingual in poetry and writing in general.
I wanted to begin by asking you guys a very sort of seemingly straightforward question, which has to do with languages and being bilingual. What is your first language? And maybe you could start, Miss.
I've just been in Stockholm for a month, so right now I have Swedish.
Yeah. Is that what you answer when people ask you what your first language is? And have you always done that?
I've always said that Swedish is my first language, but I wouldn't always say it's the one I use most or it's the one that I feel most comfortable with.
Okay. How about you, Juana?
It's a controversial question.
It is, isn't it?
English is the first language I learned. But also I don't know if it's the one I'm most comfortable with or, you know, whether I'm most fluent in Spanish or in English. It sort of changes depending on the context maybe, and I have different strengths and weaknesses in both languages. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? How about you, Yanis?
My first language is Greek. I've studied a few other languages like French and Spanish, but I can only say that I'm fluent more or less in English, apart from Greek. So yeah, I consider that Greek is my first language. And I'm working my way to perfect English. It's a hard way, a long way, but I'm trying my best.
Is there a way of being perfect or have completely mastering a language, do you think?
No. I think... Well, in English in particular, I feel, in my experience at least, that English seems a lot more endless in terms of, you know, being able to acquire a wider range of what you're able to do with a language, especially when you're working as a translator, for example.
Okay.
And you want to be able to switch between lots of different registers, depending on the context and the characters that are speaking. And so I feel really hyper aware of kind of my own zones of, you know, comfort zones, but also aware of, you know, all the areas for improvement. Whereas in Spanish, I don't know if it's the, you know, the language itself that has this kind of, if the English is richer than the Spanish or if it's just my experience of the language, but I feel like in Spanish there's a much more closed end in terms of proficiency and mastering the language. English feels a lot more vast.
Okay. Is that something that you guys recognize as well with your languages, or is there a difference that way in terms of that one language feels richer. I've read articles back in Sweden where somebody would say, oh, but it's such a shame that English is taking over because Swedish is such a rich language and there are so many more words. And I go kind of, really? Is that something that you can actually say? What do you think, Agnes?
I think Swedish can be a really rich language and so can English. I guess I was thinking about it mostly as a spoken language.
Mm.
And I've just been back in Sweden doing research with migrants who are learning the Swedish language and kind of their experiences of it. And something that is really starkly contrasting with people who are learning the English language in Britain is that I would say that there are loads of ways of speaking British fluently that isn't the way that people who were born in Britain speak it.
Mm-hmm.
And there are various dialects and there are various kind of class dialects and regional dialects in English that all count as being fluent. In Swedish and in Sweden, there's still a kind of strange clear-cut line where people who kind of lived in the country, spoken the language for 10, 20, 30 years will still be read when they are spoken as someone foreign because their accent, their pronunciation isn't exactly the same as someone who was born there. And I'm saying that way Swedish in spoken language is less rich because there's less possibilities of variation while still coming off as being fluent.
Is that to do with the fact that it's just a smaller language in terms of how many people speak it, do you think?
I think
there's only one country that actually speaks. Well, there's Swedish Finnish as well, but...
Yeah, I think that's definitely part of it. Mm. And I think also, as compared to English, depending on who you ask, but according to a lot of professionals, it's a much harder language to learn.
Mm.
You know, there are a lot of rules that don't apply and rules that are very regular. And there are small differences like the word for a or en and et being, you know, there are no logical reasons. Someone who's lived in Sweden for 45 years but has never heard that word before will not know
which one
term
it
to
is.
Use. So there are little indicators in the language in which someone who wasn't born into the language, hasn't heard every kind of word, wouldn't have picked the kind of traditionally correct term. And so I think in that way there's less possibilities for variation. It's a less rich spoken language. But there are also more possibilities for kind of adding together words in ways that are interesting, especially
absolutely.
In poetry. Mm. So I don't know, but I would say in the spoken language, I'm really excited about learning English and working with English because there are possibilities of choosing how you speak, of choosing your dialects, and that being an active choice, not a correct or an incorrect choice, which I feel that sometimes it is in Swedish.
That actually brings me to a question that I wanted to ask all of you, which is there a sense of freedom when you've got some sort of distance to English as a language?
I don't know if I feel more free in English to be more kind of inventive and experimental in terms of, you know, making up words or playing with syntax more. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Because there's the other another way to look at it as well, which I feel at least, and I've heard people say, oh, but you know, you could, you bring something into the English language because you come from somewhere else and because you have a different perspective on it. But it also means that you can be incredibly self-critical and also just be very aware of your kind of inexperience in that field. Do you get that?
Yes. When I first moved here and I started writing in English, I found it harder than I find it now to write in English. I feel that I feel restricted in a way when I decide to write in English because language is something you're continuously trying to master, and I'm trying to break new ground in how I speak and write, and it's always a big challenge to do that. When I'm writing in my native language, in Greek, words and ideas, I'd say, come easier. Mm-hmm. While when I try to translate these ideas into English, it's a much slower process. But these restrictions allows you to discover new things, and it's always helpful, I think, to work using both languages. Sometimes some poems start in Greek, then I translate them in English, and this allows me to follow new roads.
So does the poem then change?
Exactly. I have in my mind let's say, an image. It doesn't matter if I choose this paint or the other paint. When I say this paint, I mean like, let's say, the Greek words or the English language. I will do whatever necessary in order to make this image complete. So it's an interesting process.
That's a wonderful image. I quite like that. Keep that at the back of my head. Could we maybe hear a poem at this point? Would you like to read a poem for us, Agnes?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, is there anything you'd like to say about the poem before you start?
I think it's fairly self-explanatory. Basically, I wrote a show about bilingualism and about working in multiple cultures and languages, several of which have been English-speaking, but have been quite different. And this was just after, I don't know, I'd been reading a lot of scientific studies on the subject, even though that's not at all my field of research or my field of academia, just because I'd been trying to explain to native English speakers who didn't speak another language what it was to say that there was a richness or a value in speaking more than one language, even if you didn't use it. You know, I've lived in Edinburgh for a while. I don't use Swedish in a lot of my day-to-day life, aside from speaking to my parents and people back home. There's still a richness and a value to being able to have both those languages and how you think and how you feel and how you reason. And so I decided that the best way to express that was to make fun of scientific studies.
Sounds good.
So this is about that. A recent study at the University of Edinburgh, conducted by a team of researchers led by Dr. Thomas Back, based on the data from the Lothian Birth Cohort. You know the one. No? A recent study found that learning a second language slows down the aging of the brain, decreases the effects of Alzheimer's, and I've come to terms with losing mobility of limbs and functions of several vital organs, but take away my mind and I am hemlös I mig själv, sorry. I mean, take away my mind and I'm homeless in my own skin. Because I can't bear to part with my mind or my memories, I bring you life or death bilingualism. Because I need to sing these languages like mitt hjärta slår i otakt, because my heartbeat tries to catch up on itself varje gång jag reprogram my brain's language selection, because annars schizophrenia får inte plats ett enskilt språk på sig, because language learning eradicates the borders between you and me, I bring you life or death bilingualism. Because a recent study at the University of Edinburgh, conducted by a team of researchers led by Dr. Thomas Back, based on the data from the Lothian Birth Cohort, you know the one, a recent study failed to find that languages are wings. The more you speak, the higher you fly, the more you see. Like, have you ever andats a love or fingertoppsmekt a loneliness? No? Then what do you know about love? What do you know about loneliness? Because I've had to know. I bring you life or death bilingualism, because a recent study at the University of Edinburgh, conducted by a team of researchers led by Thomas Back, based on the data from the Lothian Birth Cohort, failed to find that bilingualism is a butcher's knife. It splits your very being into separate compartments, labels them in letters the others don't understand before it forces you to expand beyond who you were in every direction until your insides have become so wide that no lover or friend can ever fill all those voids you've created inside, because they will never know all the conjugations of you. Remember what I told you about loneliness. On the other hand, is there anything more beautiful than our ability to speak across boundaries? Boundaries like nations and borders and tongues. Boundaries like flesh and bone and blood, to speak straight into hearts and be heard. A recent study at the University of Edinburgh conducted by, you know what, fuck it. A recent study was conducted in only one language, so screw the study.
Thank you.
I really thought I'd lose my voice there. Yeah. I'm going to breathe for a while now.
You went brilliantly. That's something that you actually mentioned as well, Jan, is writing a poem in different languages, as in using different languages within one poem. Is that something that you've all done at one point or another?
Yeah.
Mixing is fun.
Yeah. What is fun about it, and why do you do it?
I guess for me there's a sense that nobody can tell me that this is wrong, you know. Whereas both in Spanish and English I have this sense that I need to kind of be quite correct with my syntaxes and my everything else. But like when I'm doing Spanglish, it feels like my own idiolect, you know, and this is something that I have complete autonomy over, and I can choose exactly which language you know, I want to communicate a certain concept, or which is, you know, this was coming through in your poem, like sometimes maybe a certain word in Swedish might be better in your mind to express what you want to express. Yeah, and it can be compared to a different palette.
I wanted to ask you, Juana, have you always written in both English and Spanish, or is one language taken over at a certain point?
Well, fortunately, my diaries go back to when I was 9 years old. And it's really funny because I start in English, move into Spanish, go into Spanglish, and then into English. And I think I've always, well, since I acquired Spanish, I've always felt when I'm writing in Spanish, I feel like I'm translating from English in my head. And when I'm writing in English, I feel like I'm translating from Spanish. That's so really I lie somewhere in the middle there. And that's why I find it so hard to answer the question about which
what
is
your first language?
Yeah. I've thought about that idea of a first language quite a lot. And I feel like there's almost something subversive about questioning the idea of a first language, because like me, for example, I have two first languages.
Yeah.
Like I grew up speaking Spanish and Swedish, and that somehow is really difficult for a lot of people to understand.
Yeah.
It's like, well, there has to be a first.
Yeah. Which days of the week did you speak which language?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Which was the first word you ever used? Was it in Spanish or was it in Swedish? What was it? I have no idea.
Because I often think about that as well. I tried to learn my grandfather and part of my family's language is Hungarian, but my grandfather, my father's father, never taught his son, my father.
Mm.
So me and my dad have gone to several like courses to try to learn Hungarian,
mm.
all these kind of ways where, you know, he didn't learn at home, I didn't learn at home, but we'd like to have it because we still have family there that we go to visit, and it's sometimes hard to communicate with them in English and Swedish. And it's one of those things where, in a way, that's more of my mother tongue than Swedish is. Like, in a way, that's a longer family history, and there are more interesting family histories going on there, and ones that I'd like to respect and be part of. But in another way, I still speak about three languages, like three words in Hungarian still. You know, I can say good night, and I can buy a beer, and I can flirt. And that's it. Like,
what else do you need?
It's been my grandfather's great theory. He speaks eight languages, and he says that if you can buy ice cream, and you can buy beer, and you can flirt, you can live there.
That's it. That's all you need.
It's worked for him.
Yeah, and it's you moved to the UK to do the creative writing masters at Uni of Edinburgh. Did you find that there were quite a few people who were writing in English as their second language?
Not really. I think the majority of the students were either from the UK or from the United States. There were a few people from Netherlands, from India, but I think it was only five in total, five out of 30.
Did you feel that kind of made a difference at all, or were you on equal footing in terms of workshops and how you interacted with each other about each other's texts?
I think it was interesting having people whose first language wasn't English, and having workshops where we didn't only workshop the ideas and the plot of a piece, but also the language. And it's always interesting to see how one person uses the language, how a native speaker uses the language, and how a person whose language is different. You can also see differences on how a person from the States and the UK uses the...
Absolutely.
Definitely.
So it's it was really interesting having the workshops, seeing how each person approached their ideas and what ways they found to do that. Dusk. The train derailed, and a hill of stars, the precious cargo, was spilled on the tracks. The villagers, with shovels resting on their shoulders, are silently admiring the trembling matter, and the station master in distress is scratching an empty sky. His arms are entangling, whitening, becoming a moon. Under the church's plane tree, an old cat with three legs is playing with your shadow and is winning. Behind the gates of nude houses, with black rocks in their pockets and red knees, With improvised maps and atlases of imaginary animals, the children are waiting for the next train.
Thank you.
It's beautiful.
Have you translated a lot of your own poetry from Greek to English?
I'm trying to translate everything I'm writing from Greek to English. And the reason is that I've been involved with many workshops and writing groups, and with Agnes, for example, we were part of Inky Fingers. So, and living in a literary city like Edinburgh and being part of it, I need to find my voice. And so I translate everything I write in English. And as I said earlier on, it's not that I write them in Greek and translate them as they are. It's a more complex procedure. So the final product is a mixture of languages just delivered in English, if that makes sense.
I've been thinking about, I mean, there's loads of people who live somewhere else but still keep writing when they write creatively in their first languages, whatever that may be, and then get translated by other people. Would you find it difficult to just write in Greek and then have somebody else translate your work and that, and have that be it?
I wouldn't have any problem, but as I said, this restriction when I'm writing in English, there's the same restriction when I'm translating my own work. It would have been easier if I had someone whose level of English is much higher than mine to translate my Greek work, but when I'm doing it myself, I feel that this restriction allows me to rediscover the poem, to rediscover the images I want to work on. And yes, this rediscovery allows me to go back to the original poem, if I can speak of such, like of an original poem, and rediscover it again. So it's a continuous procedure working both ways. And I'm enjoying it, to be honest.
It's great, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's wonderful. Do any of you feel like there's a difference between different genres or kinds of writing and how they relate to which language you use? Is there a choice in regarding which language you would use for different kinds of writing? I think that was my question.
Yeah, and I think there definitely is. I mean, I only write poetry. I've tried to write longer pieces, but I get bored and nothing happens. But what I find is that if I'm writing something to be published or to be shared online, and it's going to be mainly shared in its written form, I wouldn't write any Swedish words without translation. Because I know that the majority of people I know who will read it are either have English as their first language or speak Swedish as well as English. So wouldn't mind. But if I'm performing a piece, and if I write a piece knowing that I will want to perform it, which is what the majority of what I do, any kind of poetry collections I've made have been written down versions of kind of scripts for performance pieces. And in those cases, I tend to not mind if there are short bursts of Swedish, because, you know, the embodiment of it, the use of your voice, the use of everything else means that people usually won't lose track, they won't zone out if they don't understand those particular words and they don't know that particular language. So that's really helpful. I did, in the show I did last year, Sorry I Don't Speak Culture, I, at the end of the show, kind of asked the audience to please bear with me for 1.5 minute while I did a poem in Swedish, but I had it translated with subtitles behind me. So I clicked a button for each line so that they would kind of be kept up to date. And again, I wouldn't do that if I didn't have, you know, 45 minutes of kind of building a trust with the audience first, because even when people are kind of very open-minded and really want to understand, people tend to zone out and it's hard to win them back over. So I tend to only do short bursts in Swedish if I perform to a majority English-speaking audience. And I tend to translate entirely if it's in written form. Maybe I'm underestimating my audience. I don't know, but I...
Well, it is a bit of a wild card, isn't it?
You're
putting people through something when you just dipping them into a language that they have no familiarity with at all. What's your experience of performance poetry culture in Sweden compared to the UK and performing in different
I was actually, I did my first performance poetry spoken wordy event in Sweden, my first one in years. I went to last month, and more than half of the performers, it was an open mic, so it was open to anyone. Everyone was Swedish speaking. I can't speak to what was their first language, but everyone was Swedish speaking. But more than half introduced their poem in Swedish but did a poem in English.
That's interesting.
I found that really interesting. So clearly it's not from lack of, you know, being able to use Swedish, it's the creative choice to use English. And several of them were clearly also more fluent in Swedish than they were in English. So I think there's also something to where your kind of cultural creative influences come. I think a lot of the spoken wordy kind of world is online, and similarly to a lot of music and a lot of movies, it has American and British influences. And because those are world languages, those are things that get, you know, millions of you know, watches on YouTube, or millions of likes on Facebook. So those are things that will pop up. And I think although people are doing really interesting things that are kind of locally significant, like I would say that the Swedish scene tends to tackle political issues and philosophical issues more. And there's kind of a longer tradition, especially in Edinburgh, of writing, you know, more formatted, you know, rhyming pieces and things that kind of follow a stricter format. So there are definitely differences, but the spoken word world is starting to kind of grow together, and it's starting to do that in English. So I'm kind of interested to see what comes of it. Yeah, because I got into spoken word in South Africa, which again, majority English speaking, but there are 12 official languages. And yet, even for people who had, you know, two or three languages that they'd learned before they learned English, would choose to do it in English. So I found that really interesting.
Well, it is interesting, and a slightly uncomfortable question, which I keep coming back to, actually. And it's, is there a sense of guilt, almost, in, like, not just writing in the smaller language? Because it seems like, I don't know, I live in Edinburgh, I live in the UK, and I would find it really difficult not to write in the language in which I live and love, as it were, in which my life is kind of written. But then there's also this political aspect of it, that English is huge, you know, and there's all these little languages in which, from which very little gets translated, and so and so forth. So is there... is there a level on which you kind of have to go, right, I'm making this decision? Or is it just completely natural?
I think it depends on what you want to do with your writing project. And if your writing project is very kind of embedded in the particular language you're choosing to do it with, and if what you're wanting to do with your writing overall has to do specifically with language, I think there could be a guilt to it. Personally, I think because a lot of what I write is political, I've always felt the other way around, that if I wrote it in the smaller language that very few people could access, I would kind of be doing a disservice to the issues I'm trying to speak to, because most of the people I'm trying to communicate with, especially on live stages, wouldn't actually know what I was talking about and couldn't engage with the issues, and we couldn't have a sort of discussion about them. So I often feel like it's been, especially choosing, I think, to live in Scotland and choosing to use kind of Scottish words, choosing to slowly but surely adopt kind of a Scottish accent, has kind of been a, I guess, a political action as well. And I think it's been something that I wrote quite a lot around the independence referendum. Again, that was something where I felt that Scottish identity, and not, I don't speak Scots, I don't speak Gaelic, but Scottish identity around language became imbued in my own language identity. So I don't think I've ever felt guilty about not writing in Swedish, but I would feel guilty about not being able to reach particular audiences on particular issues. If I write about Swedish politics, I tend to write in Swedish. But if I write about British politics, or I write about kind of broader world issues or something very personal, it tends to be in English.
It tends to be in English.
I don't know if that makes sense.
No, definitely. Juana, you've written quite a lot, or your collection, Manka, was a lot about violence, particularly in Mexico. Have you written about those issues in English as well?
No. That's interesting. No, also that book was written, you know, a few years ago when I felt a bit closer to Spanish.
Yeah.
And then, you know, through not going back for a while, I found myself kind of getting a bit closer to English. and also thinking about different subjects. I think when I wrote that book, my mind was very much with Mexico. I was reading a lot of the newspapers and, you know, blogs and having discussions over there, even though I was living here.
Yeah, but you were mentally
exactly. So it was kind of gazing towards that. And also kind of my method for writing that book was quite, I don't know how to describe it, kind of working with intuition and subconscious. And so I was able to engage with Spanish. Not living in the country, I had a different relationship to the language where I could let it kind of go a lot freer in terms of like flow of consciousness or something, and a lot less preoccupied with syntaxes and the meaning of words. So it was kind of, it was an interesting position to be able to work with Spanish.
And what is it like to now that it's a little bit further away, was it like to read those poems from the position that you're in now? Does it feel like another person?
Oh, absolutely.
I get that, and it's quite scary sometimes.
Yeah. So this is a poem that was written in Spanish originally, and I translated it into English. But I had a real trouble translating one of the prepositions. And I find in English, prepositions is probably my greatest weakness and probably what usually gives me away as somebody who is a non-native speaker, even though I consider myself pretty native.
Yeah, because you were saying that it's the language that you first started speaking.
Yes, exactly. Mm. But yeah, it's because prepositions never translate directly, even if it's the same. If it's the same one, so it's just a different, I don't know, I don't have the technical words to describe it, but it's kind of a different semantic field or something, you know, like it's it's not, you with prepositions, you just don't have the same equivalent words.
It's not a direct connection.
And also it's because it's so much to do with direction, and the way space is conceived in either language is always really different. So for the really typical example is coming and going in English. In Spanish, it's the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm visiting you, I'll say, I'm coming soon. Whereas in Spanish, you would say, I'm going.
Yeah.
And I always get these wrong in both languages. And people, you know, when I'm speaking in Spanish, I will get it very wrong, and it's really weird, and people were like, what?
Yeah, I mean, especially if you have, like, a perfect accent, and people can't tell that you're, that there's no reason to suspect anything.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a strange thing. So in this case, the preposition I had trouble was from. Desde, and because it's speaking about the experience of embodiment and, you know, living inside a body, so this, it's a body from where you experience everything. So it's called This Body of a Woman I Inhabit. This body of a woman I inhabit, desde where I've lifted my hand to touch the hair on the head of Moses, suddenly moved to inside-out tears from an entire childhood, of lips stiffened to sustain the world, protect the softness of our angles, our wisdom of curtains. There's a where I've half-lowered eyelashes to seduce 3-4 hombres. There's a where I've traced the sinuous S of desire, which Crotylus called serpent and Adam called perception of flux. There's a where I've grown tired of nursing, like Teresa or Diana, like the fear they did not feel when touching lepers with their immaculate hands, the lips with which they kissed their blessed sores. There's a where I've washed out workshop grease soaked for fibers in the universal river of saliva. There's a where I've bled drops, miscarried, fertilized wheat ivy. There's a where I've been a plot, all bounty, where goats graze.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask you as well about translation, because you do work as a translator as well. Are those two different parts of your brain, like the writing one and the translating one, or are they the same?
No, yeah. I would say they're pretty much the same brain. And I feel like all writing is an act of translation, and all translating is creative writing. And even when I'm translating really technical, quite dry documents, business reports or whatever, you're still thinking, you're still constantly engaged in how concepts are articulated differently in either language, and, you know, playing around with words to make the point come across in the most appropriate way. So it's very much the same activity for me.
Scottish Poetry Library podcast. For further information about the Scottish Poetry Library, visit our website at www.scottishpoetrylibrary.org.uk, follow us on Twitter at By Leaves We Live, and find us on Facebook.